This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Just in time for Father's Day, Gerald Early has a new memoir about family and fatherhood called Daughters. Early is the director of African American Studies at Washington University. He and his wife, Ida, are raising their two girls in a predominantly white suburb of St. Louis. Early's daughters are growing up in a world totally unlike the one he grew up in. When he was a boy, his family was poor and lived in the inner city of Philadelphia. The difference between those two worlds has created a lot of dilemmas for Early in bringing up his children.
I think the biggest dilemma is they don't really understand my experience or how I grew up. Mm-hmm. And they find it pretty foreign. They also find the people I grew up with to be pretty foreign. They find the neighborhood I grew up in to be pretty foreign. So foreign that they can't really understand how all of that and these people produced the man they know as their father. And I think that's the biggest thing. And I guess the thing I wanted to try to get across in the book was trying, in fact, to get them to the point of understanding that and to the point where they finally became interested themselves in wanting to know about the little boy who became their father.
Your daughters growing up in the suburb, I mean, they want certain comforts. There was a period when they were both daughters were fighting about having to share the same bathroom. They each thought the other was a slob. So they wanted two bathrooms. Now, did you resent it when your daughters start to demand two bathrooms because you grew up poor?
Yeah, I did resent it. I mean, I resent their kind of material presumptions. Part of that is a carryover from my own childhood. And I think that all of us bring burdens from our own childhood with us into our adulthood. We bring these burdens into our parenting. I don't think we can help it. I think we can try to do things to try to deal with it, but I don't think we can help bringing those things with us. And so I wind up at times resenting, as in the case with the bathrooms, my daughter's attitudes about certain things. And it has nothing to do with them. They're totally innocent. I mean, they're just responding to their own experience and what they know. And it's all the baggage that I'm bringing with me from my own childhood and thinking that there is great virtue in deprivation, which is totally not true, but which I like to think is true.
It's hard to raise kids in the suburbs and then tell them that there's great virtue in deprivation.
There's a discipline in there. I like to tell, I use the word discipline all the time, and it doesn't seem to sink in. And it's a myth, and they're bright enough to kind of know that. And they're bright enough to know that I'm bringing on certain kind of baggage to them, and they rightly reject it.
Your 14-year-old daughter, your older daughter, Lynette, is learning disabled, mm-hmm. which you didn't know until she was in school for a couple of years.
Right.
And so you at first thought that she was just slow, that she wasn't as smart as you'd hoped she would be. What was your reaction to her performance in school before you realized that she actually had a problem?
Enormous frustration. Both my wife and I experienced enormous frustration. And so we each played out a certain kind of drama. I think Lynette may have gotten some benefit from it, but I think at the time she probably didn't. Where we were bringing, once again, our own set of associations that we had with school and our own sense of what school was to her. But it was frustrating for me because I think everyone always has a great deal of hope that your children are not even going to be as good as you are. They're going to be better. And because I'm in a business where intellect and all that sort of thing counts for a great deal, and it counts for a great deal of status that I enjoy, it was a big disappointment. And it was the biggest adjustment in the world was learning to accept Lynette as a person and to even understand what she had to offer me as a person, which for a long time I fully did not understand that child for a very long time because a learning disability got in the way. I mean, it prevented my being able to really appreciate her as a human being in many other ways because of that, because everything I did in relation to her was filtered through the learning disability.
When you thought that she just wasn't performing well before she was diagnosed with a learning disability, Was it harder for you because, you know, she was going to a predominantly white school, you live in a predominantly white suburb, and here, like, your African-American child who's supposed to be a kind of great example of, you know, a kind of model African-American family and everything, isn't performing well. Did you feel like she was just, that on this, like, larger level, it was going to reflect badly not only on the family, but on African-American intellectuals in general?
Yeah, I felt that burden terrifically. I mean, it's one of the things that my wife kept me sane about was that it was a crazy idea to feel that way, but I did because I felt in many ways that I live in a fishbowl. I'm a middle class black professional, and I live in a world mostly populated by whites. I work at a white university. I live in a white neighborhood, so you constantly feel that you're on display. Okay, you represent the race. I mean, I was going around for a long time with this idea, even though I kept saying intellectually to myself, no, this isn't true. Emotionally, I kept saying, oh, I represent the race. And so as a result, I wound up putting a certain kind of pressure on myself. And certainly, I think it very much affected how I responded to Lynette, because then it was that you were responding to your child in front of, because your child was representing you in front of all these people, and it made me feel a certain kind of shame, and then it was exacerbated by the intense shame I felt about the shame that I felt. So
it was very
difficult. It took several years to be able to overcome that.
Well, before her diagnosis, you used to lecture her about race pride, about how she had to do better. How did she respond to those? Like, what would you say to her, and how would she respond?
Oh, I would say, black people have gone through a lot, so that we can be in this position today, and you can go to the school that you're going to and everything, and you have to work harder, and you have to, you know, because it's a very natural thing I learned once we began to learn about learning disability, that parents respond to it often with children by thinking the child is lazy and isn't working hard enough. So he said, you have to work harder, you know, you can't be seen as dumb in front of white people, you know, you just can't. How did she respond to these? Often, she would get angry and say, I'm tired of hearing this, you know. She would cry a lot of times. It was, she would keep saying to me, I'm working as hard as I can. And the race thing, she just didn't understand that at all, that because it wasn't her experience. I mean, she didn't grow up with the baggage I grew up with. I mean, that wasn't her experience. She didn't. So that sort of stuff, she never, the appeal to race pride was meaningless. I mean, that was just me talking. That was like going completely over her head.
After Lynette's diagnosis, were you more comfortable knowing that it wasn't a question of underachieving? She had some kind of problem.
Yes. That made me feel more comfortable. That was also something I had to eventually overcome, was even that attitude. But yeah, that made me feel more comfortable.
My guest is Gerald Early. He's the head of the African American Studies Department at Washington University and the author of a new memoir called Daughters, on Family and Fatherhood. Why don't we take a short break and then we'll talk some more.
Okay.
Okay, this is Fresh Air. My guest is Gerald Early. He's chair of the African American Studies Department at Washington University and author of a new memoir called Daughters, on Family and Fatherhood. And he has two daughters. I want you to tell us about an incident that you describe in your memoir, in which you were stopped by the police because a jeweler in a shopping mall thought that you were lurking around casing the joint. So the jeweler called the police, and the police came and got you. Your family was there, your wife and your children, and it was infuriating and embarrassing.
Yeah, that was some incident. My wife belongs to Junior League, and they were having this Christmas bazaar or something, and we went up there for that, and that's when this whole thing happened. And I remember when the police officer came to and asked me for identification. I was really upset, and I told him I was waiting for my wife and family to come out. And I could tell from the look on his face, he didn't believe that. He couldn't possibly believe that a black man would be in any way connected with the junior league. I mean, he just thought I was talking crazy. Either he thought that it wasn't possible that if I'm married to a black woman, that she would be connected with the junior league, or I guess he didn't think it might be that I could be married to a white woman or something like that. I mean, it just never clicked with him at all. But that incident wound up becoming national news because of, in and of itself, it was a quite, would be considered a quite minor incident, but because it happened to me as a university professor and all that stuff, the newspapers in St. Louis got a hold of it, and then it blew up into a big story.
The experience nearly wrecked your relationship with your kids. How did it hurt that relationship?
Well, first, my kids didn't want to deal with it at all. I mean, they didn't want to.
They were embarrassed?
I don't know if they were embarrassed. My children, you know, they don't really like to talk about race a lot. You know, they feel as though in some ways it's a baggage that I want to put on them in a way that they don't want to deal with. This is not to say they don't understand certain realities about race in the world, but I think they would prefer, I guess, to want to understand it on their own terms, not on the terms that their fathers come to understand it. But at any rate, it was a very, you know, it was a couple of week period that this whole thing happened, and it was a pretty stressful time because of all the publicity this thing got. And my oldest daughter in particular, she got ill. I mean, I think she was sick of going to school and hearing about it or something, but she was ill for a time and, you know, just refused to talk about it. And I wanted to, I don't know, at the time, I just felt desperate that I wanted to talk to them about it and explain it to them. And I had this blow up, which I describe in the book with her, where I really just, I kind of just went crazy. I mean,
what happened?
Well, I started shouting to her about, I'm going to make you listen to this. You know, she's in bed. I'm standing over her. And I said, I'm going to make you listen to this. You know, you want to talk, you know, you don't want to deal with race. You think you're living out here in this la la land with these white people and all this other stuff. And I want you to, you're going to hear me. You're going to listen to what I'm saying. She's saying, no, get out of here. Leave me alone. And I'm shouting at her, you know, I want you to understand what they did to me. You know, they, you know, we see what happened. We tried to be striving black people. We tried to show people we were going to play by the rules and all. You see what happens, you know, nothing ever changes. You know, it's always the same. It's always the same. So I'm going on like that. She's telling me to get out of the room. Her sister comes into the room and her sister is telling me, leave Lynette alone, leave Lynette alone. And so I yell at her sister, shut up, get out of here, you know. And I really, you know, have lost control of myself. And then my wife came in and she says, I think she says something like, have you lost your mind? because I was really, I was screaming at Lynette. I pulled the blankets off the bed. And I remember I was pinching her skin. And I was saying, you see this? You see the color of this? This is the world. This is the reality of the world. And she's crying. And I just ran out of the room, and it was the most painful confrontation I had with my daughter, the most painful encounter I had with my daughter, with both of them, really. Especially with Lynette, it was very painful, and particularly the most painful thing probably since the battles with the LD. But I really felt I completely lost control of myself.
You know what this reminds me of? Like parents who work all their lives so that their children can go to college. And so the parent works all of their children finally goes to college and goes to out-of-town college at that. And the child's kind of lost to them in a way because the child has been changed so much by this education.
Right.
You bring up your children in the suburbs in a middle-class life so different from your own upbringing. And their experience of reality is different than yours. They haven't been exposed to the racism you were exposed to, I guess. So I guess they find your vision of racism slightly incomprehensible because it's not...
Right.
You've brought them into a world where that's not their reality.
Exactly. And so all that yelling and shouting and everything, I mean, it didn't make much of an impact with Lynette, except she thought I had gone crazy, which I sort of had. I mean, she certainly didn't understand all this other raving that was going on. And, you know, it was very upsetting, because it was something I had to learn from that about understanding my children on their own terms and understanding how they see their own lives and their own experience. And that was just another example of that my world that I grew up with is not the world of my children.
Well, I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
Thank you for having me on.
Gerald Early is the director of African American Studies at Washington University. His new memoir is called Daughters, on Family and Fatherhood. This is Fresh Air.